This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Imposition of state income tax on these retirement benefits, which is something the state had promised they wouldn't do. And it takes away that extra benefit for people who are out of state. And the third change doesn't impact members directly because it asks the PERS board to consider, in essence, re-amortizing or adjusting the amount of time we will take to recognize the very, very bad investment return that the system got in 2008. Because you probably recall how bad investments were for everyone then, not just PERS, but all around the country. Retirement systems lost money. So they've asked the PERS board to make an adjustment and re-amortize that or to extend it over a somewhat longer period of time. And as a result, when you put those three pieces together, I think the total savings in the next biennium amount to about $800 million. So we're certainly talking about some very significant money.
So, Greg, as a younger worker that has a current retirement system, I'm enrolled in PERS, stale account at the moment. What impact would this bill have on me when I look for retirement?
Well, I think one of the things that's not generally recognized is the very significant impact it will have on current active members, because the limits which are built into the bill, which kind of ratchet down the amount of COLA that people will receive, are not indexed for inflation. So in other words, they're going to remain fixed. Mm-hmm. And over time, as salaries increase and pension benefits correspondingly go up, you're going to see those limitations striking more and more people and striking them more and more severely. As a matter of fact, in an analysis done by the PERS system itself, they indicated that the greatest impact, you know, if we just compare dollar for dollar impact of this bill, isn't on current retirees, but it's on people who are currently active members who presumably will retire in the future.
So tell me, Greg, why do we feel that changes to the PERS system are needed? Why is the government looking at making these changes in the first place?
Well, when you say why do we feel, I have to make certain that you understand there are many of us that don't feel those changes are appropriate. What has happened is, again, going back to 2008, 2008 was a terrible investment year around the country. I mean, we all know about the Wall Street excesses and what caused the problem and what caused the tremendous drop in the market.
Yes.
And the PERS system lost 27 or 28% of the total amount of money it had. That's an enormous hole. And the way you make up that loss is twofold. You get good returns, which PERS fortunately has had for the last 3 or 4 years. But the other thing that happens in a plan like PERS is employer contribution rates have to go up because you have to have a method of filling up that hole. And so we have seen significant increases in employer contribution rates. And I don't want to minimize those. They are serious. I mean, we're talking some very serious increases, and that will have an impact on the ability of various employers to deliver services and give raises to active members and so forth. But it's our position that even though that's difficult and even though that is causes serious problems, you can't take away people's pension rights as a way of dealing with the problem. The legislature really has to look for other solutions.
And Greg, I understand there will possibly be some legal challenges to portions of Senate Bill 822 and the 40-some-odd other bills that are being proposed and discussed right now. Can you give us any insight on that?
Well, certainly, if we just focus for a moment on Senate Bill 822, there will certainly be legal challenges to the COLA provision. You know, if we go back as short as 10 years ago when the last round of PERS changes were made and those changes were challenged, the Oregon Supreme Court talked specifically about cost of living and basically said, look, that's part of the PERS contract. You can't change that. So it's hard for me to understand why anybody thinks at this point that when the court has said that just a few years ago, that suddenly the rules will change. So you'll see a challenge to that. And you'll probably see a challenge to at least a portion of that out-of-state, you know, change. And that would take me a long time to explain. But But basically, I think the coalition of unions that I represent believe that part of that is a breach of contract, and I think it's likely that that would be challenged as well.
All right.
Of course, well, and of course, there are about 100,000 retirees and a couple hundred thousand active members out there, any one of whom could challenge these as well. So I don't think there'll be a shortage of challenges.
Sure. Well, thanks so much, Greg, for giving us that information.
We also have Mary Botkin on the line to give us another overview of where SB 822 is in the process of becoming law. Mary, are you there?
I'm here.
And Mary, can you tell us a little bit of what you do to give us some insight as to your knowledge on PERS?
A group of labor lobbyists that works on PERS. You know, generally we like to think that we have worked to make PERS better. I've been doing this for a really long time. Just in the way of background, when I first started working on PERS, a career employee, and this, by the way, this was some 25, 30 years ago, but a PERS retiree after 30 years of work could retire. And when they retired, many of our retirees, a majority of them, could actually qualify for food stamps and low-income housing. And a group of us got together and formed the PERS Coalition and started working to bring benefits up. And, you know, as I tell our members all the time, the good news is we made PERS a better system for members. The bad news is we made the system a better system and gave them what we considered to be livable benefits after a full career of 25 to 30 years. And unfortunately, that's what's under attack now, is the fact that we actually made the PERS system a good system that provided a livable, dignified retirement for career employees. And so that's, you know, that's generally what I do. And now my job has become more of just defending what we built within the system. And as Greg so adequately put it, you know, the Wall Street crash is what caused PERS to really go into the red ink. And, you know, we're sort of trying to dig our way out of it. And, you know, we're not digging fast enough, evidently, because they feel like the solution is to slash PERS and cut benefits for career employees. And as Greg said, it's going to hurt active members as well as retirees.
So, Mary, could you tell us a little bit about where Senate Bill 822 is in the process right now of becoming a law, and any other bills regarding PERS and where they're at in the process at the legislature?
Well, Senate Bill 822 has passed the Senate. It passed on a party line vote. And so all the Democrats voted for it. All the Republicans voted against it. And I think it is important to say that a good majority of the Republicans who voted against Senate Bill 822 voted against it because they really want to make the changes much more dramatic and much more harsh and draconian. I think there are members of the legislature who would like to abolish PERS completely, though they certainly don't have the chutzpah to say it outright. But it was very distressing to have our Democratic governor and a majority of the Democrats supporting these additional changes to PERS. We really feel like the changes that were made in 2003 were sufficient to change. It changed the system significantly. It created a third tier, and folks just are not going to be able to retire with any kind of dignity, in our opinion, as a result of the changes in 2003, and this just exacerbates those changes.
So, Mary, are you basically saying if the stock market crash hadn't happened, the debt wasn't realized, would we be talking about these changes right now, in your opinion?
I think, in my opinion, we might be talking about some minor changes, but we certainly would not be talking, in my opinion, you know, I have sort of a foggy view of things, I guess, since I represent, you know, people who work for government, and it's, you know, I'm pretty committed to supporting their needs. But in my opinion, I do not think we would be looking at what we're looking at today.
I've got a question for you, Mary. What kind of employees are covered by PERS? Just for people out there that don't know.
Okay, so everybody who works for government in Oregon is covered by PERS. So everybody from nurses that work at OHSU to support staff or general service people who work there, all the employees who work in local government, so everybody who, you know, fixes your water and your roads and answers your 911 calls, all of those folks are covered by PERS. State government employees, everybody from the folks who work in the prison system to people who work at DMV and DEQ, they all are in PERS. Every police officer and firefighter in Oregon is in PERS. Every corrections officer who works in the prison are in PERS. And
teachers.
Unlike other states, every one of our public employees is in one system. In many states, they separate the systems. They have teachers in one system. They have, you know, local governments in the system, and they have police and fire in a different system. But here, everybody, including teachers, the folks who drive the school buses, and the folks who work in the classrooms are all in PERS.
So these are the folks that are teaching our next generation. These are the folks that are protecting our streets, that are fighting fires, that are keeping us safe, and they want to cut retirement benefits away from these folks to save a dollar?
Yep.
That's terrible.
Well, they actually want to save $3 or $4, but...
So could you tell us real briefly, Mary, what needs to happen from now on until to make Senate Bill 822 a law? What's in the process? What in the process
right now,
needs to occur?
Right now, the bill has had a hearing. It had one public hearing that held in the evening that workers were allowed to testify at. And I want to give some credit to the committee in that they did give people an opportunity to tell their stories. And, you know, you were limited. You only got 2 minutes to tell your story, but you got 2 minutes. And they did stay for a considerable length of time to allow everybody who had come to testify. They got everybody that was there to testify got their 2 minutes to do it. And that was a joint committee made up of both House and Senate members. It was a joint committee of the Ways and Means Committee, so the bill will not get any more hearings. It went to the Senate floor first because it was a Senate bill. It passed the Senate floor. It will now go directly to the floor of the House.
All right.
Well, so, you know, at this point... you know, this is the old Johnny Cash song, you know. I hear a train a coming, you know.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Mary.
Thank you.
And Mary, we've got on the line Agatha Brown, who is a state worker. She's in the public employees retirement system. She works for the Department of Lands. Agatha, are you with us?
I'm here.
Agatha, can you tell us a little bit about what just the rumors and fears about these bills coming down the line? What kind of impact has that had on you and your coworkers?
Well, for me, not so much because I'm a little ways away from retirement, so I like to think I have some time, which may not be true. But people who were able to retire but were going to work for a few years longer, they've decided they're just going to retire now because they don't know. Everything's very... It seems, as one guy put it, is I feel victimized, for working
definitely
for my fellow citizens. So he's gonna get out before he loses any more. So a lot of, and that is happening with people who have all this institutional knowledge.
Oh,
yeah, and they're just saying, the heck with it, I'm gonna go.
So how's your agency reacting to that sudden knowledge gap you're soon to realize?
Well, I'm not privy to what
true
to what management does, but so I really don't know how they're going to handle that. Mm-hmm. But like this particular guy I'm talking about has got a lot of knowledge. He has his 30 years in, but he's young, so he was going to work a little longer. He has a lot of knowledge, and they haven't even tried to start recruiting for him yet because it's just so daunting a task to get somebody to come in there and do what he does, you know, and bring him up to speed in any period of time that won't impact the program negatively. So, and that is happening throughout. So I really don't know, you know, maybe they have a plan, but it's not one I know about.
So, Agatha, for workers that are around your age, not looking at retiring very soon, are you afraid of what this might mean for you when you do decide to retire?
Yeah, I worry about that. I have these, well, they haven't gotten to nightmares yet, but I'm thinking of, I'm going to be living on saltine crackers and Campbell's soup, you know, which there's nothing wrong with these things, but I kind of hope to eat a little bit better than that.
Except for the sodium count, maybe.
Yeah. So that worries me, will I be able to afford somewhere to live decently? Because it could happen.
Definitely.
You know, if they keep doing this, it's scary.
So your fears sound very similar to the way that Mary Bodkin had described the situation with PERS before she began lobbying for improvements 25 to 30 years ago.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Agatha. We really appreciate you coming on and talking to us at Labor Radio.
No worries. Thank you.
So next, we're going to talk about International Workers' Day. That is May 1st. It's recognized around the world just to a gathering of workers in general. This is typically in the Portland area, sponsored by Jobs with Justice. And this year's May 1st rally will be gathering around 2 p.m. in O'Bryant Square. That's between Southwest Stark and Southwest Washington Street. There will be a rally and a march to follow. So this is typically a very colorful, joyous event where you've got a variety of work groups coming together, not necessarily organized labor, but just workers in general to recognize this International Workers' Day. And Stephanie's got a bit more to tell us about that.
Yeah, and I also wanted to make sure to plug the Salem rally at the Capitol.
Oh, yeah.
Which will be, I believe, at 11 on the same day. And that's in an effort to push for the reinstatement of driver's license and overall immigration reform. For the past, I believe, 7 years, we've seen kind of, I guess, an uprising or a more of an organization of immigrants, Latinos mainly, towards immigration reform. And so in an effort to encompass that population and in recognition that workers are from all over the world and that workers in the United States are from all over the world and are not only English speaking, we have a caller on the line. Her name is Albertina Vallejo. She is a member of SEIU. She's a home care worker. And like I said, just to encompass all workers and in recognition that workers are from all over the world, this interview is going to be held in Spanish. And I'm sure to come, we'll have more interviews regarding the May 1st rally, you know, that are in English. But again, just to make sure that we're an all-encompassing labor movement and we're moving things in the right direction, this interview will be in Spanish. Buenas tardes. Hablo con, ¿estoy con Albertina?
Sí, soy yo.
Hola, buenas tardes. ¿Cómo está?
Muy bien.
Mire, para los radioescuchas, díganos un poco de su trabajo. ¿Quién es usted?
Pues yo soy una ama de casa, yo tengo dos hijos, yo soy purépecha de Michoacán y tengo aquí prácticamente 27 años y son 27 años de lucha. Estuve mucho tiempo sin documentación, lo cual ahora ya tengo desde hace ya 2 o 3 años y es algo que yo me he realizado con eso porque fue muy duro para mí no tener papeles, no poder sentirme segura en un lugar de trabajo, estar pensando de que el día de mañana me pueden checar mis papeles y quitarme el trabajo. Claro. Y yo tenía tengo dos hijos que mantener, entonces esa era mi preocupación. Y ahora con lo que está pasando de la reforma migratoria, ojalá esto se lleve a cabo, porque hay muchas mujeres en mi situación y me gustaría que ellas también se sintieran seguras en sus trabajos, en los lugares que vayan, para así poder pues asegurar prácticamente el futuro de sus hijos.
Sí.
Y eso es lo que a mí me gustaría. ¿Vas a traducir?
Pues sí, ¿por qué no? So Tina was just telling us that she is a single mother. She is mother to two children and was for some time undocumented, an undocumented worker. And so her hope is that, you know, or her struggle has been that, you know, she's been in this country for 27 years, a worker that entire time. And, you know, her hope is that in the future, mothers like her will have the ability to, you know, get some sort of documentation, because it is a struggle. Y Albertina, ¿qué piensas de las licencias que están pensando dar y también la reforma migratoria que se está pensando hacer?
Pues yo pienso que es algo que no se debió de haber quitado, ya que por medio de eso uno anda en el camino. Como ellos dicen, un camino seguro. Si uno no tiene licencia, uno no puede ir al doctor, uno no puede ir al trabajo, uno no puede agarrar una aseguranza, uno puede prácticamente hacer uno nada. Nos atan de manos y más sin embargo, si se devuelve la licencia, podemos hasta se contribuye con monetariamente hablando a Estados Unidos. Imagínate tanta gente que está sin papeles, sin aseguranza, sin poderse mover. Es la oportunidad para que Estados Unidos crezca económicamente hablando.
Okay, gracias. Yeah, so Tina was just saying that you know, it's kind of questionable why the driver's licenses were taken away. You know, when one is driving on the road unlicensed, uninsured, it's incredibly dangerous. And so she feels like it's sort of kind of like having someone tie your hands up and not being able to move. Again, she doesn't know why it was taken or why the licenses were taken away. Because in her opinion, that would be a contribution to the state and would, you know, start to kind of pump in some sort of money towards the creation, you know, if those were reinstated, the licenses and the insurance that goes into the economy as a cause of that. Y dime tu esperanza con la reforma migratoria, ¿qué es? ¿Y qué piensas de lo que han propuesto?
Pues es algo que estamos esperando, algo que sea justo para todos, porque ya que hay mucha gente desde hace mucho tiempo esperando esto, y es algo que pues va a aliviar mucho de las situaciones económicas y situaciones familiares acerca de de las personas que se encuentran aquí, ya que ellos no pueden visitar, no pueden viajar a México, no pueden agarrar una mejor oportunidad de trabajo, y con esto yo pienso que va a ser algo que va a ayudar a todos, pero que sea justa, que sea algo que tengan razón de dar esta reforma, ya que pues no pedimos más. Nosotros no somos terroristas, nosotros venimos aquí a contribuir, ya que se nos quitan impuestos en nuestros lugares de trabajo. No estamos aquí nada más, como dicen, robándoles los trabajos a los que supuestamente son de aquí, ya que nosotros también tenemos derecho a sobrevivir. A eso venimos, a sobrevivir, ya que en nuestros países de origen hay mucha pobreza. Y es lo que tratamos de venir a hacer aquí, a sobrevivir y a tener mejores oportunidades para nosotros y para nuestros hijos.
Okay, gracias. Yeah, and just to translate again briefly, you know, it's Tina's hope that, you know, it's been a long time coming that, you know, this immigration reform passes, and that in her opinion, it would, you know, stimulate the economy, help economically to people that are undocumented currently, you know, help with familial or family statuses. Sometimes we see that often working families are of mixed status, so the kids are documented and parents are not, or the grandparents are not. And so there's an inability to have and maintain a familial connection, you know, and it's impossible to visit family members that are in a different country, as well as people that are, you know, not from here, that are living outside of this country, to come and visit their loved ones. And so in her opinion, it would be something that would alleviate that and also create opportunities and help everyone. But it's her hope that it is a just reform, you know, people contribute in their taxes, you know, not stealing jobs that are very much wanted by people that are here, maybe citizens. Okay, pues muchas gracias, Albertina, y la esperamos mirar en la marcha.
Claro que sí, invitamos a todas las personas que se unan, aunque no griten, no, pero con la presencia es lo que cuenta. Hay que hacer presencia ahí, hay que unirnos, hay que juntarnos para que esto se lleve a cabo, ya que pues muchos tienen ese temor de decir, no voy a ir porque va a estar la migra, y no es así, esto se va a llevar a cabo en orden, y es algo justo que estamos pidiendo, y
okay.
Pues es todo. Quisiera decir muchas
otras cosas. No, yo entiendo, y muchas gracias por todo lo que ha dicho. We hope to see you at the march and rally, and in solidarity, this is us. Thank you.
And thank
gracias,
you for
gracias.
Thank you for listening to Labor Radio on KBOO 90.7. Hopefully, we will see you next month.
The time is 6:29, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members in a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information online at ubc156.org. Please stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? Spent most of my life in prison, chasing a dream called justice. Chasing a dream, chasing a dream. Won't somebody please hear my plea? Won't somebody please set me free?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Juan Melendez spent almost 18 years on Florida's death row for a crime he did not commit. In 2002, he was exonerated and released from prison. Juan Melendez was in Portland at a Lewis and Clark Law School event that was coordinated by the Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty and the Oregon Justice Resource Center in cooperation with Witness to Innocence. I spoke to Juan Melendez before that event, and he talked about his journey from death row to freedom. So Juan, you were convicted of murder and robbery in September of 1984. You were released from Florida's death row after 17 years, 8 months, and 1 day.
Yeah, who's counting?
And upon your release, you were the 99th death row inmate in the United States to be exonerated and released because of innocence since 1976. So what was life like for you prior to being convicted?
Oh, I'm just a simple migrant worker. I used to what you call a fruit picker. I pick everything God created. That's a simple man. But one of the mistakes that I find myself real hard to forgive is I quit school, and I was not a dummy. I was a 4.0. And even my mama say, I forgive you everything except for quitting school.
And what year did you quit school?
I quit school in 1968.
How old were you?
I was 17. I decided to look for what they call the American dream, and it turned out to be the American nightmare.
And you were born in Brooklyn, I understand, but you were brought up in Puerto Rico, is that correct?
I was born in Brooklyn, New York, and I was raised in the island of Puerto Rico. They took me back when I was just a little kid.
How long were you in the States?
In the United States. When I came back when I was 18 years old, and I left in 1970, and I didn't go back to the island January 11, 2002. 32 years. When I left Puerto Rico, I went to the state of Delaware to pick asparagus, vegetables, and apples. And then I decided to leave Delaware to go to get the citrus fruit in Florida, to get the oranges, tangerines, grapefruits, etc., etc. And that's what I was doing.
Were you ever in trouble with the law?
Yes. I will tell you, and I'm very shameful to tell you that in 1975, were drinking and using drugs. We ran out of money, and me being trying to be a cowboy, I took a solo shotgun, and it was unloaded,